WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Day two of a port strike along East Coast and Gulf Coast key docks. Workers demanding higher pay and guarantees that automation will not eliminate jobs. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg on the sticking points.
The last contract that these workers were working with really did not deliver much for them. Economic times were tougher then. There were some years where I believe there was no wage increase at all. So they feel, the workers feel that they're also kind of playing catch up.
The White House urging workers and the union to return to talk. Search and rescue efforts continuing in western North Carolina. More than 170 people confirmed dead across impacted states from Hurricane Helene. President Biden in the Carolinas surveying the damage, and Vice President Kamala Harris is in Georgia meeting with first responders. Israel vowing to respond after Iran launched a barrage of missiles yesterday. Israel's government weighing options. Security threats heightened due to the start of the Jewish high holidays. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Kamala Harris is holding on to a four-point lead over Donald Trump in Wisconsin in the latest Marquette Law School poll. She leads 52% to 48% with both registered and likely voters. The margin of error is 4.4%. In the U.S. Senate race, Tammy Baldwin leads Eric Hovde by 7 points, also with registered and likely voters alike. Donald Trump blaming the Biden-Harris administration for high prices at a campaign stop yesterday in Wanakee.
People that were saving a lot of money are now losing a lot of money. They're taking the money they saved and they're spending it. So we're going to get those prices down.
For her part, Kamala Harris says she wants to take on price gouging. She campaigns in the Fox Valley tomorrow. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Superior Mayor Jim Payne shared his 2025 budget proposal with the City Council on Tuesday. In the proposal, Mayor Payne focused on a reduction in the tax levy and city's debt, as well as highlighting infrastructure projects like the solar panels at the fire hall. If approved by the City Council, the budget would decrease the tax levy for the second year in a row and reduce the city's debt for the seventh year in a row. The budget also includes a $10 million bond to fund the fire hall if grant funding from the EPA doesn't come through. Two residents were displaced after an apartment fire in Ashland on Monday afternoon. According to the Ashland Fire Department, crews responded to the fire at a three-story, multi-use building on Main Street West at around noon on Monday. When they arrived, they found flames coming from the second-story apartment windows and residents waving their hands for help from both residential floors. Firefighting crews managed to contain the fire and there were no fatalities. Officials are still trying to determine the cause of the fire. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers face elimination tonight. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. The Brewers will play the Mets today in Game 2 of the best-of-3 wildcard round. Yesterday, the Mets defeated the Brewers 8-4, retiring the final 17 batters to take the win. Manager Pat Murphy said the Brewers will need to respond today after not being able to put anything together late in yesterday's game.
This team has responded in all those. Remember, the Dodgers beat the daylights out of us twice. We responded. The Yankees beat the daylights out of us twice. We responded. I think we'll respond.
First pitch is after 6:30 p.m. If the Brewers win, they'll play a decisive Game 3 tomorrow evening. The Green Bay Packers will try to bounce back this week as they play the L.A. Rams on Sunday after losing last weekend to the Minnesota Vikings. Kickoff this Sunday against the Rams is after 3 p.m. on Sunday. The Milwaukee Bucks announced their 2024 training camp roster on Monday. Camp begins tomorrow for the Bucks. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Civic Media Sports.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
A gorgeous day today under sunny skies. High temperatures will scrape the mid-70s. However, we do have breezy winds out of the south gusting up to 40 miles per hour, creating a high fire danger. Avoid burning. Winds ease tomorrow, but high temperatures stay cooler in the low 60s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 73 degrees at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Congresswoman Summer Lee.
The American Stability Act doesn't just address the need for raising of the wage. The second thing is that tax reform piece, shifting the burden from the folks who are working class to the not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen so many benefits in this rigged system, and we have to start to unrig it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It is National Monte Cristo Day. It's kind of one of those sandwiches, it's like bell bottoms. You just haven't heard about it in like 40 years. But it got me thinking, what's a sandwich that's totally overrated? I'm going to go first, the Philly cheesesteak.
Really?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm spoiled. Because in Wisconsin, we have the brat packed with tons more taste than a Philly cheesesteak.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the legendary comedy team, Stephen Leo, writers of The Santa Claus, Space Jam, and Kicking and Screaming. And Abby Novak joins the show to talk Appleton's Shop, Sip, and Stroll.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for listening. You can be a part of this fine production, 855-752-4842. Appreciate you all tuning in. Big day today. In studio with me, Matt Rothschild. You may know him from the Progressive Magazine, from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Also an author, 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin. You find that one on Amazon. Matt, welcome. Thanks for joining me, man.
It's a bestseller.
Yeah, baby. Of course, just on the board, on the phones, 855-752-4842. A big show, breaking news. Jack Smith has new details on the charges against Trump. We'll get to that immediately. At 4:30, Charles Franklin from the Marquette Law School poll. That poll dropped today. We will dive into some of the numbers there. Also at 5:30, Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez going to catch up with her in this election season. So look forward to speaking with her. But let's get right into it, Matt. Didn't know this was going to happen. Oh, yeah, there was a debate yesterday, but that's old news now. We'll try to fill in some gaps if we need to on that when we can. But the ABCNews.com is reporting bombshell immunity filing details Trump's alleged increasingly desperate bid to overturn the 2020 election. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Special Counsel Jack Smith outlined new details of former President Donald Trump and his allies sweeping and increasingly desperate efforts to overturn the 2020 loss in a blockbuster court filing Wednesday aimed at defending Smith's prosecution of Trump following the Supreme Court's July immunity ruling. Now, Trump intentionally lied to the public, state election officials, and his own vice president in an effort to cling to power after losing the election while privately describing some of the claims of election fraud as crazy, prosecutors allege in the 165-page filing. One more paragraph here. When the defendant, a quote from the piece, when the defendant lost the 2020 presidential election, he resorted to crimes to try to stay in office. With private co-conspirators, the defendant launched a series of increasingly desperate plans to overturn the legitimate election results in seven states he had lost. As mentioned, 165 pages in this filing dropped an hour or two ago. And Matt, you ran through that whole thing, man.
Got my skimmer going. Yeah. And let me just try to boil it down, because there's a lot of legal arguments in here. But basically, what Jack Smith said was, despite the Supreme Court's ruling on immunity, we still got this guy.
Yeah.
And that ruling shouldn't get in the way at all of us dragging his behind into court. And so the judge should proceed with the trial of Donald Trump. But let me get into the legal arguments after that rather crude summary. So now I'm quoting from Jack Smith. Although the defendant was the incumbent president during the charged conspiracies, his scheme was fundamentally a private one. Working with a team of private co-conspirators, the defendant acted as a candidate when he pursued multiple criminal means to disrupt, through fraud and deceit, the government function by which votes are collected and counted, a function in which the defendant as president had no official role.
Uh-oh.
And let me go on if you don't mind.
Please.
None of the defendant's charged conduct is immunized because it either was unofficial or any presumptive presumptive immunity, which relates to Pence, is rebutted. They said, and Jack Smith continued, he requests the relief the government seeks, which is at bottom, that the court determine that the defendant must stand trial for his private crimes, as would any other citizen.
Woohoo!
There you go.
Shocking. Go, man.
Go at him, Jack.
A little bit here. I'll jump in here. Matt noting, nothing the government intends to present to the jury is protected by presidential immunity. Although the defendant's discussions with the vice president about, quote unquote, their official responsibilities qualify as official, the government rebuts the presumption of immunity and all of the defendant's remaining conduct was unofficial. As content, form, and context show, the defendant was acting in his capacity as a candidate for re-election, not in his capacity as president. In the alternative, if any of his conduct were deemed official, the government could rebut the presumption of immunity.
And let me continue here from Jack Smith. The through line of these efforts was deceit. The defendants and co-conspirators knowingly false claims of election fraud. They used these lies in furtherance of three conspiracies. One, a conspiracy to interfere with the federal government function by which the nation collects and counts election results, which is set forth in the Constitution and the Electoral Count Act. Two, a conspiracy to obstruct the official proceeding in which Congress certifies the legitimate results. And three, a conspiracy against the rights of millions of Americans to vote and have their votes counted. That is dramatic. At its core, the defendant's scheme was a private criminal effort.
The defendant used deceit to target every stage of the electoral process. They get into the false electors, and you can find this on the internet. I found it at, I think Axios had a nice link to the PDF, 160 some pages. You can get through it fairly quickly. And Wisconsin, I did a little, you know, some word searching, you know, like Jim Troupas and Ron Johnson. Well, of course, they blocked off some of those. They say, you know, CC1, co-conspirator 1, co-conspirator 2, P1, P2, I'm assuming person 1, person 2.
They refer to Troopers, they refer to Ron Johnson, but not by name.
And Rudy Giuliani, but you have to infer based on, you know, the context and the other words in those paragraphs and what we know to be in the public realm. But, you can't do the name search. But the state of Wisconsin mentioned 10 times. More details here, the breakdown by Matt Rothschild in the studio with me. The false electors, as president, the defendant had no official responsibilities related to the state's administration of the election or the appointment of their electors, and instead contacted state officials in his capacity as a candidate.
Not president.
Well, and just to stop right there, and I think this is obviously a big one. You know, the executive branch is not involved in this. He, as a president, is not involved in the counting of the ballots and in the election process. That is out of his realm. I mean, that's it, period.
Right.
Full stop. Now, he is involved, I guess, as a candidate in the personal capacity, but even then he doesn't have the ability to dictate terms to the locals.
He doesn't have the ability to call the Georgia Secretary of State and give me those 11,874 votes.
Right. Tellingly, the defendant contacted only state officials who were in his political party and were his political supporters, and only in states he had lost. You know, again, it's almost like this was a plan, like it was a conspiracy. Like he looked at these states that he lost and got a hold of his political buddies there. He didn't get a hold of the Democrats. He didn't get a hold of Democratic governors or any of those sites and say, hey, the election was stolen. No, he called his lackeys, the folks that he thought would do his bidding for furtherance of this crime in a personal capacity as a candidate, not as a president in an official capacity. Again, telling the defendant contacted the only state officials who were in his political party and were his political supporters and only in states he had lost. The defendant's attempts to use deceit to target the state's electoral process played out in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
Ding, ding, ding.
There's one of 10, as well as across these other states that had used certain voting machines.
One of the things I learned by just skimming this document was that Trump had sent out this tweet condemning Hagedorn for Hagedorn. This is Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Brian Hagedorn, a conservative who sided with the liberals in a very important and courageous 4-3 majority opinion that he wrote, Hagedorn, saying that we're not going to overturn the election and throw out hundreds of thousands of votes like his conservative, so-called conservative
and his
justices wanted.
And his objection was pretty strong. I mean, yeah. The remedy that they're asking for is to throw out hundreds of thousands of votes. That's not a remedy.
He said it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it would send us down a terrible road, he said. And he also said they were too late with their complaints. So he had a procedural and a substantive argument for throwing the Trump case into the garbage can, which he did. So Trump sent out a tweet saying, what's with this guy? I supported him. He was way behind in his campaign until I supported him. And then he said, Trump said, we won Wisconsin in a landslide. If it wasn't for this justice, we would be the winner in Wisconsin. And after that tweet went out, evidently there were Trump supporters who were so enraged at Hagedorn that Hagedorn had to get additional police protection.
Wow.
It says here.
From the Republican supporters. Interesting. You know, when your own political party hacks come after you, man, maybe you're in the wrong political party.
Yeah, I've been wondering when Hagedorn's going to rip up his Republican Party ID. But Jack Smith said the tweet by Trump after this decision, the tweet attacking Hagedorn, was, quote, partisan, personal, and unofficial.
Partisan, personal, and unofficial. Seems like it's very personal, partisan, and unofficial. A little more from the breakdown of the Jack Smith filing that was released today. At its core, the defendant's scheme was a private one. He extensively used private actors and his campaign infrastructure to attempt to overturn the election results and operated in a private capacity as a candidate for office. Very true, very important, very specific facts. What really still bothers me, this whole like Department of Justice thing. I mean, he did these things in the private capacity, but he also used his office, his official presidential office, to try to overturn the election as well. I mean, he engaged with the Department of Justice. We had that Jeffrey Clark character said, "Oh, I'll do it.
Sign me up. I'm an environmental lawyer, but let me take hold of this thing."
And under threat of mass resignation, only then did Trump back down. I mean, he had this, Jeffrey Clark had this letter ready to go out, wanted people to sign it. Hey, we found all this fraud. No, we didn't really find it, but just say we did and leave the rest to us.
And the U.S. Supreme Court says any president can do that from here on out.
And that's okay. That's okay. And that is very, very concerning.
So Jack Smith took all that stuff out.
He took
out
it
of
all out.
Note.
And I know it's not in here, but let's remember it wasn't just Donald Trump in his personal capacity. He was also using the weight and force of the federal government as he could, which is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, this is quite an incredible document that Jack Smith has submitted. I encourage people to read it for yourselves. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the argument on Pence, because the Supreme Court seemed to shield Pence, and they take the shield away. Jack Smith does.
Folks, you are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Breaking news, big, big day today. Appreciate you tuning in. 855-752-4842. Matt Rothschild in the studio with me, Jess on the lines, on the horn. At the bottom of the hour, we have Charles Franklin, the director of Marquette Law School poll. That dropped today as well. We'll get into some of that detail. And later on at 5:30, the lieutenant governor of the great state of Wisconsin, Sarah Rodriguez, will join us as well. You be a part of this fine production. 855-75-CIVIC. Join us.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites, and making obese people pay more for health care. and a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar. Something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us. Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
The Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Matt Rothschild in the studio with me, Jess, on the lines. The breaking news, a 160-page filing released today. Jack Smith's efforts to prosecute Donald Trump showing that this was personal and not official. We're going to dive into that. As mentioned, Charles Franklin, director of Market Law School, poll coming the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, Jack Smith went to great pains to go after Trump one way or another, but especially for his trying to get Pence, squeezing Pence, to try to throw out the legitimate votes at the Electoral College. Jack Smith writes, the executive branch has no authority or function to choose the next president. So this is Jack Smith arguing that this wasn't the official capacity. Trump wasn't acting in his official capacity when he was talking to Pence to tell Pence to do the wrong thing. Jack Smith goes on, the framers designed a system of separated powers in part to ensure that no man's allowed to be a judge in his own cause because his interest would certainly bias his judgment and not improbably corrupt his integrity. There they're quoting from Federalist Papers number 10. And Jack Smith goes on, the defendant's charged conduct, that is Trump's conduct directly contravenes these foundational principles. He sought to encroach on powers specifically assigned by the Constitution to other branches in order to advance his own self-interest and perpetuate himself in power contrary to the will of the people. As such, applying a criminal prohibition to the defendant's conduct would not pose any danger of intrusion on the authority and functions of the executive branch. The vice president's role as president of the Senate is highly circumscribed and ministerial in nature. The 12th Amendment gives the president of the Senate no substantive role in determining how to count the votes to the electors appointed by the states. Rather, it provides only that he, quote, shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, unquote, and then shifts to the passive voice, and the votes shall then be counted, unquote. Nothing in the Constitution, Jack Smith goes on, remotely suggests that the single individual serving as president of the Senate would have the momentous responsibility to decide which votes to count and how they should be counted.
Oh, but Kenneth Cheesebro, man, Jim Troopas, these guys got different plans. They read into it. They looked at the landscape. They read the Constitution. These are knowledgeable attorneys, Matt. And they determined that, yes, in fact, there was. You can do it. Trust me.
You know, you've heard of creative accounting. That was creative lawyering.
Yeah, no doubt. And very consequential, certainly for the country and perhaps for Donald Trump. The lies about Wisconsin's tally Ooh, I mentioned Wisconsin mentioned in this unsealed filing, 165 pages long. Wisconsin is mentioned 10 times. Here's some of the quotes. Hundreds of illegal drop boxes were used in Wisconsin. Over 90,000 ballots were illegally harvested. Can't do that. Not allowed. Through so-called human drop boxes, and over 500 illegal unmanned drop boxes were put out statewide. At the Ellipse, he said that. In Wisconsin, corrupt Democrat-run cities deployed more than 500 illegal unmanned unsecured drop boxes, which collected a minimum of 91,000 unlawful votes.
I just don't know where he's grabbing these numbers.
I mean, but
this is what he did.
And
he
we're just still dealing with Dropbox issues here in the state of Wisconsin. The mayor of Wausau was out there screwing around with that. I mean, this is 4 years ago, yeah, man. You wonder where that comes from.
Yeah, the propaganda gets a life of its own, doesn't it?
It sure does. That Trump goes on to say 170,000 invalid absentee votes were counted. Over 170,000 absentee votes were counted that are blatantly illegal under Wisconsin law, should never been included in the tally. Over 170,000 absentee without a valid absentee ballot application. So they had a vote, but they had no application. And that's illegal in Wisconsin. Again, this is what Donald Trump was saying.
And Jack Smith points out what he was saying was totally false. And it was part of his fraud.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So at the very conclusion, if you're like me, you just sometimes like to read the beginning and read the end, you can jump to the conclusion on page 163 and 164 and 165. I'll read it to you, though. And it's a little legalistic. But basically it says, we're bringing him to court. We're bringing him to trial. Judge, you got to do that. Based on a fact-bound analysis, for the reasons explained above, the court should determine that the conduct described in the factual proffer of Section 1, in the argument here, is not subject to presidential immunity. As part of this determination, the court should specify four determinations. First, that the government has rebutted the presumption of immunity attached to the defendant's official communications with the vice president. Second, that the remaining conduct described was not official. And in the alternative, that the government has rebutted any presumptive immunity. The government requests alternative rulings regarding rebuttal for all conduct the court finds to be unofficial to buttress the court's record, ensure thorough and efficient appellate review, and minimize the risk of successive rounds of appeals. Furthermore, based on the determination that all the conduct here described is not immune from prosecution and encompasses all the allegations in the superseding indictment, the court should further specify, three, that the defendant is subject to trial, and four, that the government is not prohibited at trial from using evidence of the conduct we described here. Respectfully submitted, Jack Smith, special counsel.
165 pages of respectful submittal. There is more to get to, but we do have a guest coming. We want to keep him up as well. Charles Franklin, Director of Marquette Law School, Paul Cumming. But Mark, we'll squeeze you in on this topic. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Yeah, thanks. And you've been singing my song right along right now. The only duty that Donald Trump had officially in this whole thing, or Mike Pence or any of these people, is to uphold the Constitution. Because Donald Trump, when he takes the oath of office, one of his duties is to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. And if anything official is involved in that right there, he violated that. He violated his oath. I mean, it is just, I've been singing the song about the fake electors for quite some time now, and that any abridgment or denial of our right to vote, have that vote counted, is a violation. And for these Republican districts, maybe, I guess, under the 14th Amendment, I think it more applies to state actors rather than these individual.
Yeah, but Mark, I know you must have loved the part that mentioned the Federalist Papers, and I know you love the Federalist Papers. Thanks for calling, man. This is a glorious day indeed. Hopefully, we'll actually see a trial one of these days. Folks, you are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Appreciate you tuning in. As mentioned, Charles Franklin, he's the director of the Marquette Law School polling. We got some numbers that came out today. We'll dive into some of those numbers. And again, take your calls, 855-75-CIVIC.
Things can get better.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A task force from Wisconsin is helping with Hurricane Helene relief. Members of Wisconsin Task Force 1 have specialized training and capabilities. 16 members of the Swiftwater Rescue Team left over the weekend to help with search efforts in North Carolina. They come from 8 fire departments from across the state. A new report says agribusiness consolidation has led to less competition, higher prices, and abusive practices. The report's author is Basil Musharbash.
We found that either a single firm or a small, tightly coordinated group of firms have amassed monopoly power, the power to control prices or exclude competitors from a given market, in nearly every major industry.
The report finds abuses such as engineered shortages designed to keep prices high. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. A new working group has been created to determine the future of the closed Lester Park Golf Course in Duluth. Mayor Roger Reinhart announced the Lester Park Recreation Working Group on Tuesday with the goal of including year-round recreation options at the course and evaluating nonprofit or third-party management models. The group is scheduled to have their first meeting on Monday at the Lakeside Lester Community Center, and they are expected to provide their recommendations for the future of the golf course by April 1st. The former Village of Hawkins treasurer, who tried to steal nearly $100,000 from the library in April, has entered a guilty plea. According to court documents, 79-year-old Marsha Lyons tried to wire transfer about $95,000 from the Village of Hawkins library account to a different account, but was unsuccessful as the library account didn't have those funds. She then transferred $67,000 out of the library account, saying she was only going to borrow it for a couple of days so she could buy gold. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Inside Out is the gift that keeps on giving to its fans and obviously to those who created the film. Disney has announced the film received 31 million plus views in its first 5 days of release on Disney Plus. According to Variety, this is the biggest premiere for a film on Disney Plus since 2021's Encanto. The film is the highest grossing animated film of all time and so far the highest grossing film of 2024. Frankie Valli is speaking up. Not on stage, he's been lip-syncing there. After rumors that Valli has been forced on stage to perform, the 90-year-old legend says he is there of his own choosing because he loves to perform. In addition to seemingly going through the motions, Valli has looked frail in concert videos that have gone viral. Valli released a statement to People.com clarifying that he is not being forced on stage, although the statement was in print, so there is no way to tell if it was lip-synced. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. The wind settling down a little this evening, mostly clear tonight and cool with a low close to 40. And mostly sunny for tomorrow, highs in the low 60s. Frosty tomorrow night, then sunshine returns Friday afternoon, highs mid-60s. Right now it's 73.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
She is performing in Wisconsin. Charo, you might want to end up moving here because you're going to have that great of a time in Baraboo. Let me just ask you this. Do you like cheese?
I love the cheese. I'm going to be eating cheese for 24 hours. You have a great reputation with the cheese. Wisconsin cheese is very, very famous.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll discuss the new film Closure, the story of the closing of our two-year campuses, and also look ahead to a visit from Vice President Harris next time.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
And thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Super jazzed right now. Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School Polling, joins us. Charles, welcome. Got Matt Rothschild in the studio with me as well. Welcome, Charles.
Good to see you both.
Likewise. Big, big, big day today. We love it when the polling drops. And again, unfortunately, again, this is after another debate. Charles, do you plan these things? I mean, how does this work out all the time?
It's just a miracle that that happens every single time.
Let's dive into the numbers at the top end. Vice President Kamala Harris versus Trump. What are you seeing, Charles?
Harris by 4, 52 to 48. That's the same as it was in the beginning of the month, early September. That's also up from where she was when she first got in the race in July. We had Trump up by 1 with registered voters, but we had Harris up by 1 with likely voters. Now it's a 4-point margin for Harris with both registered and with likely voters.
So the trend it's the same though. So she's kind of, yeah, did you say she's topped out?
Well, I don't know, but we just didn't see very much change between early September, which was the week after the Democratic convention, and late September, which was the week after the debate. And so in both of these cases, we just didn't see a whole lot of movement other than what we saw from July to early September. And personal characteristics of the candidates are pretty stable, too.
Charles, Matt Rothschild here. The thing that impresses me about Harris in this poll and in the last one is that she's over the magic 50 mark. I mean, she's at 52%. And a lot of times campaign folks and their own pollsters say if you get over 50%, you're pretty good. And here she's standing still at 52%, which is, you know, more than 50 plus one.
Well, that's right. Though, in fairness, now we ask people if they'd vote for Harris or Trump, or haven't they decided? And about 6% say they haven't decided. We then ask the undecideds, if you had to choose, who would you vote for? And that's where you get the 52-48 with almost nobody who says, no, I really can't choose. Still, she's been running in the upper 40s. Or over 50 in the multi-candidate race. She's also a 4-point lead, 48 to 44 with registered voters, or 49 to 44 with likely voters. So you can see that she's, if not at 50, she's in that high 40 range.
Yeah, and campaign managers sometimes say, if you're at 48 or 49, you can crawl to the finish line.
Charles, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Has dropped out of the race, but the Supreme Court has left his name on the ballot. I see that he is what? He's polling at about 3%. How's that trend over time now that he's actually out? Has it gone down? Do people know it? What's your sense?
He's been declining steadily all year. Back when he first got in the race, or when we first started asking him about him in the early spring, he was at 16%. Then he fell to 13, then to 8, and 8. Last month, he was at 6, and that was after he had dropped out, and 86% said that they knew he had dropped out, but he still got 6%. Now he's down to just 3%. Whether he'll fall more or not, I don't know. If you put all of the third party candidates together, they're getting a total of 6% of the vote. And compare that to 2016, which was the all-time high this century, of 5.5% of actual votes for third party candidates. So that means that the third party vote, which was running in the mid-20s 8 months ago, is now back to 6%. But that's as high as it's been since 2000.
But the odds are good, Charles, that that's going to diminish by the time we get to Election Day.
I think so. The other third-party candidates are getting either 1% or 0%. Kennedy at 3% could still fall a little bit further, I think. And ultimately, the pressure is the wasted vote argument. Yeah. If these are mostly folks that don't like either the Democrat or the Republican, or else they'd already be voting for them. But when push comes to shove, do they want to cast that protest vote, which may be a very sincere protest, or do they decide, you know, they'll vote for who they perceive as the lesser of the two evils?
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School polling, that came out today. Okay, Charles, let's talk about the Wisconsin senatorial race. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin versus millionaire Eric Hovde. What are we seeing?
Yeah, that's a 7-point Baldwin lead now. That's up from a 4-point lead early in the month. Over the whole year, we've had her as low as 4, and we've had her as much as 7 at earlier points, not just the 4 and the 7 this time. So it's been pretty consistent in that range. We did have one result that showed it a tie among likely voters. That was back in April, I want to say it was. But it didn't show up the next time, so it looks a little bit more like a fluke rather than a real change there. And on favorability, she's 47 favorable, 47 unfavorable, a dead even, 0 net favorability, whereas Hovde's a negative 9 net favorability. That's the same as he was last poll. And excuse me, people have gotten to know him a lot more. Over 80% didn't have an opinion of him back in April, and that's down to just 18% now.
It's not helping him.
But in that time, both his favorables and his unfavorables have moved up, and the unfavorables a little faster than the favorables, though. For the last two polls, he's kind of held the balance even at a net negative 9.
With regard to the favorables, how about Trump and Harris and the VP candidates as well, Charles?
It's mostly a sea of negativity, but some more negative than others. For Harris, it's a net negative 3, 47 favorable to 50 unfavorable. Trump's a negative 11, 44 to 55. J.D. Vance is also net negative at minus 13, 38 to 51, and 11% say they don't know enough about him. But then we get to Tim Walz, who's the only one that's net positive at plus 7, 45 to 38, and a rather big 16% that still say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. And finally, Kennedy is at negative 15, 36 to 51, and 13% don't know.
Charles, it's hard for a presidential candidate to win with a negative 11 unfavorability to favorability. Has there been in your memory, a presidential candidate who was able to win that far negative?
Yeah, his name was Donald Trump. He won in 2016.
How bad negative was he then?
He was worse than 11. I think it was in the high teens, but Hillary was in the low teens or high single digits. 2016 was the first race since the 70s when pollsters first started asking the favorability question, in which both candidates were net negative for most of the campaign. Trump considerably more than Clinton, but as we saw, that wasn't actually what determined the outcome. So you'd certainly rather be at minus 3 than minus 11. But I don't think you can take that minus 11 to the bank when you look at the history of Trump, including in 2020 when he just barely lost Wisconsin, but had a solidly net negative rating then as well.
Charles, one of the things that popped out at me when I was watching you this noon, giving your presentation on these new numbers, was independents. They're moving in Harris's direction and Tammy's. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and this is, I think, one of the more interesting changes that we've seen in the last two polls. In the winter and spring, independents were favoring Trump over Biden by a little bit. And since Harris got in the race, they were pretty evenly divided in July. But now in both the early September and the late September polls, they're favoring Harris with about 61 or 62 or 3% of the vote. Hmm. And so that's a notable move. Now, independents can change their minds. I say they're fickle because they really will change over the course of the campaign. But now we've got two polls in a row that are showing them at around 60 for Harris. So I still wouldn't swear that they won't move before the end. But we've seen them going for Trump earlier in the year. We've seen them evenly divided. And now we see that significant advantage for Harris with them and two polls in a row. In the Senate race, they've also moved. They were always more favorable to Baldwin, but now they are also in the 60% range for Baldwin. So a little bit of a move there. Generally, I would say they are contributing to why Harris is up 4 now instead of maybe tied or up 1 is that movement. Democrats are nearly unanimous behind Harris and are very close to unanimous behind Baldwin. Republicans a little less so. There's still 5 or 8% crossover from Republicans to either of the Democratic candidates. But the independents are shifting the race a bit in the Democratic direction right now.
Can you talk, Charles, about enthusiasm? I know Trump was in the state yesterday bragging about he's got all the enthusiasm. That's not what your numbers showed.
No, but he's got a lot of enthusiasm. early in the year, Republicans were outpacing Democrats by 15 or more points on enthusiasm. When Biden dropped out, Democrats shot up 22% from poll to poll June to July. Republicans went up by 7 points, I believe it was, in that same period. And then Democrats went up again in early September after the convention and have held basically flat. They're down 1 point this time. But Republicans had kind of moved up after their convention and then flat, but now they've moved up again so that it's 71% of Democrats very enthusiastic to 67 for Republicans. So a close margin there and a reversal of the big Republican lead early in the year. And back to those independents, half of them now say they're very enthusiastic. That's up from the mid-30s earlier.
So this suggests we're going to have a huge turnout again, don't you think?
I think we are looking at something like 2020. Whether we quite reach those levels is always a mystery, I think. But when enthusiasm was 15 or 20 points below where it had been in 2020 back in the spring, I was thinking we really might see a drop off in turnout. Now, with this higher enthusiasm, I would guess we're awfully close to the 3.3 million that we saw in 2020.
Charles Franklin, director of Marquette Law School Poll. Find him on Twitter at Polls and Votes. Just a couple minutes left, Charles. This one kind of makes me a little sad. Stop talking about politics. What's the question here and what's the trend line, Charles?
It's terrible for radio, I got to tell you. the question is one that goes all the way back to the gubernatorial recall in 2012 in our fifth poll ever at the Marquette poll. We asked, is there anyone that you've stopped talking to about politics because of disagreement over the election? And we've asked that each presidential year, as well as that before the recall. And in 2012 and 16 and in 20, it was about the same. It was 34, 35 and 36 had said they'd stopped talking about politics with somebody. This time it's up 10 points to 46% who say they've stopped talking to someone. So a bit of an increase, and especially in light of how we thought that things were really tough for the recall and for 16 and for 20, but those were all about the same. 10-point increase this time, I think that tells you something about where we've come in the last 4 years.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School Poll. I hope you never stop talking about politics with us, Charles. Thank you for coming around. Certainly appreciate it.
Always happy to. Take care.
Thank you. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Matt Rothschild in the studio. Come back with your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
When Senator Tammy Baldwin first went to Washington, the big news story was Y2K. And we were partying like it was 1999. Baldwin has been in D.C. for more than 25 years. And after a quarter century, her values are a lot more Washington than Wisconsin. Baldwin supported providing puberty blockers and sex change surgeries to minor children in Wisconsin. And Baldwin supports forcing women's domestic violence shelters in Wisconsin to admit biological men who claim to identify as women, even though domestic violence survivors say it would be traumatic to be forced to sleep in the same shelters as men. Tammy Baldwin, 25 years in Washington has changed her, and now she's just too extreme for Wisconsin. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
Every day, Cintas service reps help businesses get ready for the workday. They provide freshly laundered workwear delivered every week. Mats, mops, restroom and cleaning supplies. First aid and safety products to help your employees stay safe. They even test and inspect fire extinguishers and emergency lights. Cintas helps keep your business running smoothly. See what Cintas can do for you. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Thank you to Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll, coming around. Love it when we talk some numbers.
He's great, isn't he? I love that guy.
Man, he's just so smooth, just knows those numbers, man. And, you know, I don't like, we see him on the stream. You know, he's got his computer in front of him. I mean, he pulls, you know, numbers out from years ago, man. So really appreciate Charles bringing the numbers back around with us. A texter, Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids. Oh, no. 17% of my brain just melted onto the floor. What a mess. Too many numbers. Come on, Tyler. Keep up, man. You got to keep working that brain. It's not too many numbers. Go online. You can find the results of that poll.
The best numbers, though. 52-48.
52-48.
Harris over Trump.
And the independent trends that you brought up, Matt, I thought that was a great point and something that people need to pay attention to. Hopefully, if that trend continues for the next 34 days, we'll get somewhere.
And this is why it was so important that Biden step out of the race, because he was only getting 40% of the independent. She's getting 60% of them.
Yeah, big difference. Big difference. As mentioned, the Jack Smith filing was unsealed today. We have a little bit of reporting on it. We talked about it in the last half hour before Charles came around. But there is something I do want to get out there that struck me. And I'm going to use a little bit of the reporting from ABC News, and I'm going to go actually to the document itself. So here's what ABC News says. When Trump's effort to overturn the election through lawsuits and fraudulent electors failed to change the outcome of the election, prosecutors allege the former president fomented violence, with prosecutors describing Trump as directly responsible for the tinderbox that he purposely ignited on January 6th. A quote from Smith. The defendant also knew that he had only one last hope to prevent Biden's certification as president, the large and angry crowd standing in front of him. So for more than an hour, the defendant delivered a speech designed to inflame his supporters and motivate them to march to the Capitol. Now, I will digress and I'll go back to the actual reporting, the actual filing itself, page 140 on the bottom in Jack Smith's unsealed document. Instead of marching with his supporters, as he said he would, the defendant returned to the White House. He went to the dining room next to the Oval Office and began to watch television coverage of the events at the Capitol. Although the government does not intend to use at trial evidence of the defendant's discussion of, with White House staff during this time period.
Because the Supreme Court won't let them.
It provides necessary context. When news broke that rioters had breached the Capitol, the defendant's advisors, including Person 39, Deputy White House Counsel, Person 71, and Person 9, urged the defendant to issue a calming message and make efforts to stop the riot. The defendant refused, responding that the people in the Capitol were angry because the election had been stolen. Eventually, all of the defendant's staffers left him alone in the dining room. Fox News continued to report on the growing crisis at the Capitol. They just left the old man in the dining room. Nothing we can do, man.
All alone.
It was at that point, again, according to Jack Smith's unsealed filing, it was at that point, alone, watching news in real time, with the knowledge that rioters had breached the Capitol building, the defendant issued the 2:24 p.m. tweet attacking Pence for refusing the defendant's entreaties to join the conspiracy and help him overturn the results of the election. 1 minute later, the Secret Service was forced to evacuate Pence to a secure location in the Capitol. This was roughly 90 minutes after Pence had announced publicly that he would not act unlawfully to overturn the election. The certification proceeding was underway, and the first breach of the Capitol building had occurred minutes before at 2:12 p.m. At that point, the defendant's only hope to disrupt the certification proceeding and retain power was through his angry supporters. The defendant further revealed the private nature of his desperate conduct as a candidate rather than a president in an exchange he had with an aide shortly after the 2:24 p.m. tweet. Upon receiving a phone call alerting him that Pence had been taken to a secure location, the aide rushed to the dining room to inform the defendant in hopes that the defendant would take action to ensure Pence's safety. Instead, after the aide delivered the news, the defendant looked at him and said only, "So what?"
Yeah, nice character right there. I mean, so what? I mean, it confirms what Michael Cohen was talking to Todd Albo about, saying Trump actually was enjoying what the rioters were doing, enjoying the pressure that was being placed on Pence, and sat there alone in that room, happy to see the mayhem.
It all in.
Just loving it, lapping it up.
Windows open, hearing the crowd. You know, I mean,
they're carrying signs with his name on it. He was loving it.
It was a cold, blustery day. It goes to the character, it goes to the mindset, certainly. And these, you know, if this whole nature of this filing is to determine and to convince that these actions were done in a private manner, certainly it seems that way.
I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. If you read the news accounts of this filing or go directly and read the filing, it's not totally filled with legalistic jargon. You can read it and understand it real easily. It shows without a shadow of a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Trump is guilty of sin here for the private acts, not the presidential acts that he committed during this whole conspiracy to overturn the election.
To throw out your vote, man, to disenfranchise, yeah, to overthrow the government. I mean, how many ways can you say it? You know, I mean, I recall a time when the Republicans would never stand for something like that. Nobody would. No political party would say it's okay for a losing candidate to lie through fraud and deceit and try to overturn an election.
Rob us of our most basic right to vote.
Right. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. You have the right to join us, 855-752-4842. Oh, yeah, there was a vice presidential debate last night. We'll get into that as well. Stick around.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
Pat Kreitlow.
Thursday morning, Joe Zabecki's take on Tuesday's vice presidential debate and our weekly Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. Your news just for the Superior area. I'm James Kelly with WBZH News.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.